Warning, the following ZipRecruiter radio spot you are about to hear is going to be filled with F-words.
When you're hiring, we at ZipRecruiter know you can feel frustrated, forlorn even, like your efforts are futile, and you can spend a fortune trying to find fabulous people, only to get flooded with candidates who are just fine. Fortunately, ZipRecruiter figured out how to fix all that. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. With ZipRecruiter, you can forget your frustrations because we find the right people for your roles fast, which is our absolute favorite F word. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day.
Fantastic.
So, whether you need to hire 4, 40, or 400 people, get ready to meet first-rate talent. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/zip to try ZipRecruiter for free. Don't forget, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. Finally, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
Welcome, everyone. My name is Scott Shepherd, founder and CEO of The City's First Podcast. I'm very excited to have with me today one of the leading experts in the U.S. and globally in urban logistics and last mile deliveries, Peter Shankman, who is the Chief Operating Officer with Fernhay Solutions. Thank you, Peter, for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Scott. Exciting stuff.
Yes, and we have a lot to cover today, what's happening in New York, what's happening here in Europe, UK, and other markets. And we'll just kind of hit briefly upon Fernhay, which is one of the leading manufacturers of light electric vehicles and e-cargo bikes for kind of micro logistics deliveries. So we'll have a chance to learn about your work at Fernhay, as well as some of your deployments in many different cities, London, et cetera. Fernhay is, I know, based in New York and London with multiple deployments. So really exciting stuff there. And then with that, we'll just kind of do our opening, and then we'll get started right into the questions. So for today's episode, it's brought to you by UMX, which is powered by EIT Urban Mobility. Whether you're a professional or a student, UMX makes it easy to upskill and reskill in urban mobility. Dive into their free self-paced online courses, explore expert-led videos and webinars, or go deeper with in-person training programs across Europe. You can check them out at www.urbanmobilitycourses.eu and follow them on LinkedIn for the latest in urban mobility learning. So thank you, UMX and EIT, for the sponsorship for this episode and many episodes. And with that, Peter, I think we're just going to jump in and get started. We're going to cover about 5 questions, a few minutes for each question, but we'll pass the mic to you, and then we'll kind of listen to what's next on the horizon, where we can find you. So with that, we'll just jump right in here. So let's start with the first question here, which is, how has your experience as a New York City taxi commissioner, not transportation commissioner, informed your view of logistics and micro deliveries?
So even though it was a taxi position, it began to explain to me and open my eyes to general curb management, because aside from packages, people stand at the curb and hail taxis. As a result of the progressive work we were doing in the taxi industry, electrifying taxis, making them more accessible to everyone, it was only natural that when the Bloomberg administration unveiled their forward-thinking Plan YC, the vision for 2030 sustainability in New York City, I was part of the team that put together the environmental side of transportation and a lot of ideas from ride sharing to curb management. We were talking micro hubs back then, even though no one really knew what last mile was, because the last mile delivery hadn't exploded in the early 2000s yet. So it was good experience learning the ins and outs of New York City. It was a time where the DOT commissioner, Jeanette Sadiq Khan, was implementing bike lanes all over New York City at a rate that no one had seen. And that started opening up to micro mobility. And it's all interconnected when you get into large cities. One of the things, sorry to go back to taxis, but more people interact with taxis in the urban environment than actually use them. So they've got to be considerate of people. unlike what we see in every major city. The last mile, the Amazons, the UPSs, the FedExes are taking free parking on the street for their trucks just to unload. And it's free parking all day long. The summonses for parking are just the cost of doing business. So the congestion is back in a different way, where people have to interact with three pallets of boxes sitting in a crosswalk while five deliveristas run around and deliver them, again, affecting not just the people who are getting deliveries, but the people who have to interact with the trucks. And it's a problem I've seen all over the world. And it's one of the main reasons that, as Fernhay, we see that light electric vehicles or low speed vehicles, cargo bikes, e-tuk-tuks, etc., have a place in the city because they can navigate all of this. They may not have bike lane access, but a truck park, double park taking up a whole lane reduces the ability for another truck to get down. So that's why we're seeing smaller vehicles appear across the globe.
Or sometimes triple parked, as I've seen in Brooklyn and Brighton Beach sometimes, or
This is
Coney
true.
Island.
This is
Crazy.
true.
But that was back in the 90s. I'm not sure if it's that bad now, but
It's worse. It's worse.
so it's worse than 30 years ago. Yeah.
Yes.
I remember the
30 years
triple parked,
ago, all you had to
specifically in
do,
Brooklyn, though.
you just had to deal with the couriers on cycles back then, cutting across four lanes, blowing
Yeah.
in between the trucks.
Ocean Parkway and all that area. Yeah, exactly. Interesting.
So, about five years ago, I was contracted by the largest truck manufacturer in the US, the folks that provide vehicles to UPS, FedEx, Amazon, etc. And 5 years ago, they saw vehicles shrinking. And so I went out and researched the world, found the Musashis of the world, the Gooples, the Bility, e-tuk-tuks, etc., and found that in Europe, they had understood that you've got to reduce the amount of traffic in the city centers for health reasons, and just it costs money for every minute that a vehicle is stuck in traffic. So we started seeing these cargo bikes show up in the thousands across Europe. And that brought me back to the company that had hired me. And I said, listen, you guys are gasoline and electric, but there's human powered vehicles that are just taking over London. And over the course of the last 5 years, Fernhay existed before that, but I brought the opportunity to the owner of Fernhay and said, listen, this is what's happening with trucks. UPS has gone cargo bike across Europe, and he made the investment in the health of the world, for lack of better description. And we started seeing cargo bikes and these low-speed vehicles popping up everywhere. We went in 2021, when the owner bought the company from the founder. We had 14 vehicles, 14 Fernhay cargo bikes on the road in the UK and Ireland, and a couple scattered here and there. Over the past 2 years, we have now almost 300 on the road in nine countries across the globe, and we just see it growing and growing. There are more cargo bikes in London than you can imagine. It almost looks like Amsterdam when everyone thinks of Amsterdam for bikes. But the infrastructure that's been built to support these, especially in England and across Europe, is incredible. You can ride across the city on a four-lane cycle superhighway. And when you get to New York, having ridden Fernhay E-quads all around the city for a couple of years, the trucks are still honking at you for being in the right lane. And you can't always get through a bike lane because the trucks are blocking them. So New York City had the idea that maybe they close a lane on the West Side Highway just for commercial cycles. And naturally, there was a big argument because New York City is based, transportation policy is still primarily Robert Moses. Cars are great,
Yes.
people should not walk. And it was
Right.
actually
The power
Commissioner,
broker. Yep.
right,
Yep.
it was
I have a copy
Commissioner
right here.
Tom who had the first idea of, you know, she was the first one who didn't subscribe to Robert Moses' philosophies and
She
started.
broke that 20th century top-down urban planning paradigm vis-a-vis kind of post-war, even before World War. I mean, it was with Alfred Smith and the administration of New York State
Was
back in
the
the
Patriot,
1920s. Goes
right? And
way back.
FDR as well.
That's right, with FDR, yeah, in Albany. So yeah, I mean the roots are, and even further back than that with the progressive era,
Right.
before World War I even. So yeah, I mean there's a long precedent for progressivism and modernist urban planning principles vis-a-vis auto centricity that Jeanette Sadik Khan and others by the time of the Bloomberg administration had to undo almost 60, 70, 80 years of this very kind of top-down approach.
Yes. Yes. And New York City is changing as much as it can. It gets paralyzed by its own success and you know, and political machines. But it has started to change. We've seen a lot of progression across university campuses in California, Stanford. We've spoken to Chapman University. And then you get into the corporate campuses. Where Google, Apple, and other companies, you know, have 10, 12 buildings on a campus, and the best way to interact with pedestrians and these small environments is with smaller vehicles. Now, not to disparage a golf cart or a similar low-speed vehicle, but those still hit 30 miles an hour at times, and they can be intimidating for the pedestrian traffic on campuses, et cetera. So these companies are seeing cycling as number one being a great way to get their staff healthy and lower their overall health insurance liabilities, but also it's to the Vision Zero initiative. It calms the interaction between people and vehicles. And that's something that's very exciting because not every city or town wants cargo bikes or little vehicles buzzing around.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's a toolkit approach. When you mentioned Vision
Yes.
Zero, another thing comes to mind when we talk about urban planning and urban design and actual the physical kind of structure and infrastructure cities is, the whole idea around complete streets and tactical urbanism. So counterpoint to Robert Moses, again, I'm fixating on that, is bottom up grassroots urbanism. And then
Yes.
happening at a metropolitan level, let's still, stay on New York City for a second here in the five boroughs, because it's really interesting what's happening in the outer boroughs. I like what's happening in the Bronx with the White Plains Road. They're doing a really interesting study there right now, and investing in kind of a complete streets policy there as well too. Some really interesting stuff happening in Queens, related to kind of segregating and softening the hardscape for more active modes and healthier modes. And they're
Yes.
doing it in a disconnected way because, it's a city of over 8 million people, so it's almost impossible to have a complete connected multimodal cycling network. But at a neighborhood level, it's really interesting the pilots and these projects that are really starting to pop up, one by one just over the last few
It's
months.
the
And I'm
community boards that are driving these.
Exactly.
The local, as you
The
say,
local, bottom
grassroots.
up.
Yep, you know, Samara Epstein at the Hudson, I forget the area right outside the Holland Tunnel, Hudson Square, has been really innovative with everything from trash receptacles to pedestrian and vehicle movement in the neighborhood. So you enter a neighborhood, whether it's in Queens or the city or the Bronx or even Brooklyn, and all of a sudden there's a little microcosm going on
That's right.
where this doesn't look anywhere anything like the rest of the city. It's happening in Greenpoint, Brooklyn,
Yes.
Red Hook, which it has these, which is a peninsula that is so affected by the truck traffic.
And in a big IKEA there, of course, too.
Well, the IKEA is the least of the issues
Yeah.
because UPS, Amazon, FedEx, they're all on the Queens and Brooklyn side, and
Yeah.
they're moving packages through these small streets, and the pollution, and the health problems are immense. I mean, my mother grew up in Hunts Point, the Bronx, which is the largest municipal market in it, certainly in the US, and it's got a cancer cluster
Yeah,
in that
yeah.
area. And
Environmental justice issues for
right,
sure.
so Hunts Point and the city to that point have started looking into a project that the owner of Fernhay introduced to the previous administration, geez, almost 5 years ago, the Blue Highway. And the Blue Highway envisions getting trucks and as many commercial vehicles off the road as you can, because New York, Manhattan's an island. And if you look at pictures from 70 years ago, the piers were lined with merchant ships and commercial vessels. And there's no reason that it shouldn't be that. So we've worked on it a little bit. The administration has taken off, but to the Hunts Point issue, Manhattan Beer Distributors is one of the largest in the city, and they've started moving beer and liquor down the East River to the South Street Seaport and all the restaurants down on the waterfront, which is, it's still in the pilot phase, but it's making a huge difference. The vision originally was that as Amazon, UPS, FedEx are all based in New Jersey, right by Newark Airport, aside from the congestion pricing, which just got supported by the courts, I think yesterday, plus it takes costs about $85 each trip to cross the bridge into New Jersey, and who knows how many hours of traffic, whereas it's anywhere from a 23 to a 40 minute float across the river, and New York City owns all of the piers. So when we did the original pilot with New York Waterways, it opened the eyes of the previous administration to the possibilities. Just repurposing a ferry to accept cargo bikes and small shipping containers just seemed to make sense.
Wow. Yeah, this is behavioral change writ large, but specifically for commercial transport, commercial vehicles. It's back to basics. So
Yes.
this is completely erasing, the legacy of Robert Moses again, and going back to New York City and many cities' roots in terms of urbanism, infrastructure, and physical assets that can be used and repurposed in the post-COVID city in the 21st century, because all this stuff is there. And as we have, been so, over-consumed with one modality, automobile transport, we've really kind of lost the way in terms of the ability for cities to kind of embrace a wide range of uses and activities, and getting back to what makes them a benefit for all.
Yep. And I would point out that New York City has a law on the books that for some reason they choose not to enforce. 53-foot trailers are illegal in New York City.
So.
So if New York City were to suddenly enforce that, it would force a change.
So it's on the books, but there's been lax or no enforcement of that law.
Correct. Correct.
That's a city law, huh? Okay. Wow, I did not know that.
Yeah.
Okay, let's sort of, well, we kind of spent a lot of time on that one question, or it was just a very evolving topic, which is great. But let me throw another kind of topic your way and see what you think about this. Let's say, describe how light electric vehicles and cargo bike deliveries are a necessary part of last mile policy. We talked about the Bloomberg administration and what different mayoral kind of administrations have done to kind of change the urban landscape. But how, let's say, maybe even the last 5 years, have these modalities really become part and parcel, pardon the pun, of last mile policy, and how are they becoming, institutionalized?
So the Urban Freight Lab out of the University of Washington, Seattle, coined a phrase. It's not the last mile, it's the last 50 feet, which are the most expensive. So once you park that van or truck at the curbside, you've still got to unload it, carry it a block, two blocks, three, because you can't find parking. So these small vehicles, cargo bikes, and light electric vehicles are getting within that 50 feet because in New York City, anywhere a truck commercial parking is allowed, a cargo bike can park at no charge. They're not allowed on the sidewalks, but again, suddenly you're a whole lot closer to your delivery destination, which ultimately brings down the cost of the delivery because it speeds it up. And the amount of time spent looking for parking in any city is just too much. So again, it's a logical progression that the largest truck company saw years ago. Things are getting smaller. There are restrictions in city centers, New York being the leading one in America with the congestion pricing. And it's common sense.
It's the way forward. Albeit, I think we take two steps forward, three steps backwards sometimes, especially since the pandemic, where certain, urban mobility policies across the US, at least during the pandemic, sought to kind of experiment with, open streets and trying to kind of take a little bit more of that Dutch method of kind of co-locating different activities, cars, people, recreation, all that stuff, which obviously fits in well with last mile policy. But there were several cities that kind of went backwards and reverted back to their traditional policies. So it's yet to be seen. I agree with you, New York City is a leader in America on that front, but I'm not quite seeing it across, let's say, multiple cities yet that need to build a critical mass yet. Here in Europe, for certain, and many other markets, I think Chicago is doing some really interesting stuff around this topic. And certainly when we look at campuses, corporates, etc. But my, wish would be, as we move into 2025, 2026, more cities kind of follow this template and realize, as you said, it is just simple common sense, and there's
But
really
the
no, there's
U.S.
really
has
no
a
putting the genie back in the bottle.
right. The U.S. has a legislative issues regarding these vehicles. So, for example, New York City had to create regulations that would allow the V-Loves, the Mubeas, and most importantly, the Fernhay E-Quads on the road. Across the country, it's a hodgepodge of rules that no one can follow. Even light electric vehicles. So I'm in Florida right now, and you can't go anywhere without seeing golf carts or these mini vehicles cruising around. Even the police in Delray Beach are using GEM vehicles for enforcement. So until someone like CityFi or Smart Urban Mobility starts gathering all of the legislation and trying to homologate it for the country, we're going to have these rules. So, for example, the federal definition of a cargo, of a bike, a cycle, is two or three wheels, bicycle, tricycle, but what about a quadricycle? So you throw a fourth wheel at any government agency in America and Canada, more importantly, and it's a conundrum. They don't know what to do with the fourth wheel. And even though it's got pedals, they're hesitant to declare it a cycle or human powered. So until we grasp the regulations around these vehicles, it's going to be really hard for any city or town even to say, well, we want these, because they have to legislate themselves. So the federal government allows, sets the standard. They allow the state to complement it or modify it for their uses. And every state has pretty much punted, except California, down to the municipal level, hence New York City creating these, Miami creating legislation to allow golf carts on the streets. And all of these things. So until that happens, till the federal government realizes the form factor doesn't have to be two or three wheels, then the market will expand and people will start seeing that, oh, I don't need this. I can get in your neck of the woods in Europe. You've got the new Opel and the Omis and
Yeah,
Renault,
yes.
all of these
The
mini
Citroën.
vehicles,
Yeah.
right, that we laugh at. Because we're American. Oh, well, I
Sure.
drive this. It's like the old smart car when it came out. I've seen what happens to a smart car in a crash. I'm completely comfortable with it. It's a full roll cage. It's as safe as any other vehicle, obviously, unless it gets hit by a vehicle five times its size. But other places are realizing it, but we like our trucks. And to the point of even companies not getting it. Last year, there was a whole campaign around the UPS union negotiation. Our truck drivers can make $150,000 a year driving trucks. Yeah, so that just means you've put out anything but truck driving for anyone who wants a job with UPS. And if you talk to their team members that have been there 30, 40 years, when they started, they wanted to drive the truck. It's the goal when working at UPS. And until they change that mentality, like they have in Europe, because UPS is all designated service providers for the most part in Europe that need to make money and have to use these different form factors, we're just going to be going in a circle.
Yeah, the
And
vehicle
the only
certainly.
company that's really taken on true last mile with micro mobility is Deutsche Post and DHL in Europe. I mean, Deutsche Post runs over 5,000 cargo bikes for almost 20 years already.
Yeah, it speaks to kind of the progression of public policy in Germany, which has traditionally a strong car culture, especially in the south in Bavaria. But if you go to Berlin now, Hamburg, Hanover, some of these cities in the center and the north, it's very cycle friendly, especially even since the pandemic. Albeit, some of these cargo bikes have been around longer, but the prevalence of these different kind of form factors isn't just in Amsterdam or Copenhagen or Paris anymore.
Correct.
It's spread across Germany and even Eastern Europe, and it's really starting to become part of the landscape for certain.
Yeah, no, and Eastern Europe's become a manufacturing stronghold for these micro vehicles, which is interesting. Fernhay happens to be in all the cities in Germany that you mentioned, but funny enough, when I was researching this 5 years ago, it was Bavaria that was leading the world in development of micro vehicles, because the local government and even the national federal government were putting out grants. This was around the first time that I think Russia cut off the pipeline, and they
Yeah,
had to
but you know,
start
it's
coming
it.
up with innovation to get around it.
Yeah, but what's happened though is, I would say just to kind of add a little bit of color to that is that yeah, we're seeing other markets kind of overtake that. Whereas Munich and Bavaria have been kind of the powerhouse for a lot of this innovation and manufacturing, which is rooted in the auto industry, of course, and all the that sector. Really, there's still a strong cult car culture in southern Germany versus the north and other regions where we're seeing cycling take off. So there's a lot of different
Hamburg
local
is leading Germany
new.
right now. Hamburg's
That's
now
my
got a
point.
zero emissions zone.
Exactly. Yes. So it's not to say that one city's better than the next, but there's a lot of nuance due to cultural factors where we're seeing kind of more of an uptake in these modalities quicker than others. And I think that others are coming along, but at their own pace.
And in the US, what we're seeing is a very slow adaptation of cargo bikes. Amazon now has a couple of hundred Mubeas on the road in New York, but in our conversations with them over the past 3 years or so, although they've done little pilots here and there, New York is the proving ground, and as of a year ago, it is still hemorrhaging money, and they're not able to prove out the cargo bike, market or deliveries in the US yet.
Indeed, indeed. So that is the challenge. I mean, it's an opportunity, but as of now, there's some, let's say, headwinds that need to be overcome to adopt, mass scale of cargo bikes, certainly in North America, US and Canada. Whereas, not to
Well,
say Europe is ahead, but it has a
it's
unique set
clearly
of
ahead.
conditions that, yeah, so it's a different. But I think what's very promising, though, is in some of these areas that had traditional car cultures, even Spain, Portugal, Southern Europe, Italy, we're seeing mass adoption of cycling and cargo bikes too. So that can offer a best practice or a positive, let's say, direction for maybe more auto-centric locations or cities that have ambitions for policy related to last mile logistics. Could be Cincinnati, could be St. Louis, it could be Dallas, but they're still struggling again with the conundrum around regulation and policy between the national, state, and the local level. And someone needs to step forward and be the first one out of the gate. So hoping we see more leaders at a civic level.
So what we're starting to see in the cargo bike arena and the low speed vehicles, is the cities, the municipalities themselves are adapting.
Totally.
So Fern Hay has vehicles with the City of London, the Royal Parks, soon to be the Royal Mail, New York City, talking to the City of LA. So cities have to lead by example.
That's right. That's where the
And
action is, of course.
only a few are leg a heavy hand legislation is just going to upset people. You've got to show, listen, FDNY now has a handful of Polaris micro vehicles that follow the European lead of sending an EMT in on a motorcycle or a scooter quick, stabilize the patient before the bus arrives.
And show the
And
benefits too. Show the benefits
and
to everyone.
then the parks, you've got these festivals all over the world, you've got big events, and you can't bring a van, you can't bring an ambulance into a festival. You could park it on the edges, but you need a way to get through traffic, whether it's pedestrian or vehicle. And the cities have to do that. And that I'm seeing because the LSVs kind of fit more in the automotive culture, period. It's not human powered. But what I'm seeing around the world is there's probably 3 million electric tuk-tuks on the road in places that none of us visit very often. And we're seeing that just taking over, because they get through everything. They can carry people, they can carry packages, they've got swappable batteries. I mean, one company I'm working with, Ability, out of Hyderabad, India, has over 6,000 of these things on the road just in southern India, and they've only been in, only manufacturing for a couple of years. So these little form factors are changing what people think of delivery vehicles. And in Turkey, we're seeing a bunch of these little three-wheelers, whether it's the Musashis, the Traggers. You've got the Goupils in Europe. They're taking over. They're becoming emergency response vehicles. They're becoming municipal maintenance vehicles. And that's the way it's got to start. You got to lead by example.
Yeah, cities need to lead the way and show these clear use cases of the value. With that, really quickly, maybe 30 seconds, where can we find you on social media?
Usually Fernhay Solutions on LinkedIn. My personal company, Keeping It Wheel, keepingitwheel.net. Yeah, that's
Great.
pretty
We'll
much the
include the
only place
links.
you can
That's
find
great.
me.
So, with that, that's it for today. So, I want to have a big thanks. Well, thank you as well, Peter. But big thanks to UMX for sponsoring this episode. If you want to learn more about UMX, then check out their catalog of 40 plus courses, expert videos, and in-person trainings at urbanmobilitycourses.eu. They even have a short course on today's topic around cargo bikes and urban logistics. So you can find the link in my LinkedIn post when we post this recording episode. So stay tuned as we'll be back next month talking about autonomous vehicles and future mobility. So with that, I really want to thank you, Peter, for joining and offering your insights
You.
of what you're doing leading Fernhay in terms of really addressing this market and this issue, and hoping cities take the baton and lead by example. And then it's really interesting to hear your perspective and history working as a taxi commissioner in New York City and kind of this evolution of the market and how it started with one modality and how we got to where we are today, especially since the pandemic. So it's been really fascinating and pleasure to have you, and hope
Thank
we can
you. Thank you for having
collaborate again
me.
soon. Yeah.
Awesome.
Thank
Great.
you. Thank you, Peter, very
Cheers.
much. Okay.
Bye-bye.